These people are insane. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, August 3rd.
August
3rd, 2021.
Rent is due.
There's pre-birthday Ian Ferguson.
Here I am.
I'm post-birthday Pat Contry. On the podcast today, we'll be talking about someone completing Ninja Gaiden with the Power Glove. Is it possible? It might be. We'll be discussing an update on the Polymega.
Update.
eBay is the scumbag seller of the week for a great reason. And Ian just like cracked his second or third vertebrae, I guess, over there.
Jeez, Louise. Happened.
Patreon poll topic as well. Ian, how was your weekend?
It was delightful.
when you say delightful.
Delightful.
You said in a very morose way, delightful.
Got a new job, not at Luna anymore. That was the thing I didn't want to talk about last week. So
that's, congratulations.
That's big.
I'm proud
of you.
Is it?
Big news. You ruined it. I'm never doing it again. Why would I ever do it again when you have a button you can press?
I have three buttons.
Big news. Yeah. Wow. So yeah, I'm very excited. I don't really want to talk about it a whole ton. I'll probably talk about it more when I'm actually done at Luna, and I'm not going to talk about what my new job is, not on here, but I'm very excited to finally move on, to not have the 11 to 8 schedule anymore, to not have to do trade-ins anymore.
This could be a whole topic eventually. We're looking could back be. At your job, like the memories.
Yeah. There'll definitely be some reminiscing.
You don't want to correct red ring problems on the 360.
No, that hasn't been a thing we've had to do for a long time.
Well, I remember
time.
For like a 4-year period, that was what you were doing every fucking day of your life.
Oh, yeah, that was. I was doing sometimes 12, 13 systems in a day.
That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. Kind of enjoyed that, though. It definitely made the
day. You enjoyed that?
I didn't hate it. It made the day go by really quickly.
Putting fucking that anti-heat shit
Arctic
in there.
Silver.
Arctic Silver.
Arctic Silver.
Sounds like a condom brand.
I guess. So, yeah, besides that, played some Streets of Rage 4. Bet you wouldn't believe that, but it's the 30th anniversary.
Yes, Ian.
Of the Streets of Rage series. So that's great. Go play a Streets of Rage game. They're wonderful. I actually, my love of Streets of Rage is fairly recent in terms of like really, really loving it. Streets of Rage 4, you've heard it here many times. Greatest video game of all time. Greatest game ever made. Most important video game ever made.
It's not as good as my t-shirt today, Double Dragon.
It's way better than your t-shirt.
No, it's not. This is the granddaddy of Streets of Rage right here.
But I do love the original Streets of Rage games as well, particularly the soundtracks. They're fantastic.
Well, I think they never did an arcade game.
Yeah, it's funny too because Streets of Rage 2, there's bare knuckle arcade machines. I think they're in Streets of Rage 3. They're definitely in Streets of Rage 4. So like in most of the actual Streets of Rage games, they show Streets of Rage arcade machines, but yeah, there was never a game. I would have loved to have seen a Streets of Rage game, advantage of the big sprites from back then.
Sega realized that. I mean, they did Golden Axe, obviously, but that was a little bit earlier. And that's why hack and slash that. Maybe our bread and butter in the arcade is not stuff that we're selling on the home console. You know, we're keeping it separate, maybe.
Sure.
Maybe that's what it was.
But it just strikes me as weird because that's very much an arcade style game. And I mean, they were huge in the arcades at the time, but yeah, nothing. And I got a controller from, I did the whole Microsoft Design Labs thing.
You weren't able to design a proper D-pad on yours, but I did enjoy the color scheme, Ian.
D-pad feels good, honestly, surprisingly. Anything's better than the 360 D-pad.
That was miserable.
The 360 D-pad is probably the worst D-pad ever. Second worst D-pad would probably be the Nintendo Pro Controller.
And you get on me out there. I was trying to play Street Fighter,
Four.
No. No, the one that they did, the Street Fighter 2 online one on 360. I bought it, and then, like, the fucking pain to throw a Shoryuken with using that D-pad put me off of that pretty damn quick.
Easily one of the worst D-pads I've ever used. I mean, just miserable.
It's a circle. It's like there's barely an indentation for like the cross on
that.
Well,
that was the problem. Yeah, yeah. It was a circle, but it was also the way they raised the plastic raised around the circle.
Oh, yeah.
It actually made it very hard for, like, a lot of times you would simply miss hitting the contacts because you would your thumb would hit that plastic border. There were people
I
did it with one too. Yeah, there were people I took an X-Acto knife and I widened it and then I scraped it down.
Yeah,
that was the only way to use that thing.
So anyway, so I'm glad you got your controller. Yeah. What color scheme was it?
I did purple and electric blue, ice blue, and I just wanted to
not
say
Arctic
silver. No, I was surprised because it came in quickly. They said I wasn't going to get it until August 19th, and I got it on the 2nd.
So. Okay.
That was nice.
Is that like your own birthday present, basically?
Kind of, yeah. I needed a
new controller. What do those things cost to do a custom
job? Not a ton. It was $67.
So that's what a new controller costs.
The controller is usually $60. So $7 plus the shipping extra.
So what can you customize? I did see someone with a real D-pad on one of theirs, so maybe that's an
option. No, so that was the Xbox One controller had a real-looking D-pad. It's okay, but it's kind of clicky. It's low profile, so that's not perfect either.
Didn't the Nintendo patent expire on the D-pad? Like, why can't someone just say we want to do the D-pad?
I don't know.
Like they don't want to admit Nintendo got it 100% correct, I guess.
You can color the front plate, the back plate, your triggers, your joysticks, buttons. And then you can't choose individual button colors, but you have like
sets?
Four or five different sets to choose from.
I'm down. It's the original Nintendo Power sticker, basically. Customized. It was like the original customization. Give you some stickers for your NES controller.
The only thing I'd say about it is I think they only do it for a limited time because I know that it wasn't just open during the Xbox One era. So if you want to do it, I would get on it sooner than later.
Oh, okay, get on it. So what did Pat do? Ian always asks.
What did you do, Pat?
I watched the Olympics. I love the Olympics. We won gold in women's discus. I love discus. I love the stuff that goes back to ancient Greece, goes back 2,000 years. I love those. I love the events. I watched a little bit women's wrestling. We dominated that. I think her last name is Gray. Is it Valerie Gray? Something Gray.
You like the shot put? You like the javelin?
Yeah, I like all those events. I like, there's no meaning to those. Like javelins, like, yeah, they used to throw spears and kill people in javelins. That made sense. The shot put, I don't know where the hell the shot put comes from. You weren't throwing like mini lead balls at your enemies in ancient Greece, but it's cool as hell.
You might have been.
You might have been. Load them up and toss them in a huge arc.
You weren't there.
I wasn't.
You weren't there, Pat.
Get the tortoise configuration with your soldiers. And then the steeplechase was on yesterday. Steeplechase.
Which we talked about.
If you ever played track and field 2, which they called hurdles there, is the weird event where this is 1,500 meters, which is, you know, whatever, the mile thing, or just under the mile. Four laps, basically, just about. And you run around normally, and then they're like larger hurdles. They're hurdles that are like go across like five lanes, six lanes, because there's like 10 racers at once at Steeplechase, or sometimes more. And they're thick enough that you can jump on these hurdles to jump off of them. So there's like four of those around the track, but then there's an inset, like they don't go around the whole track. They cut through then this area where there's another hurdle, but then for some reason there's a water hazard, like it's golf. There's a pool of fucking water that slopes down towards the hurdle and then slopes out where you want to jump on the hurdle, then jump. So you're going to land in the puddle, but you want to land a more shallow end of the pool, basically. But some people trip and fall face first into the puddle. I don't know where this came from, this event. It's bizarre that they have a pool of water. I think what they do is they like... It might be like the long jump pool or long jump area. Then they fill the water in there when the sand's on there. But I've never seen this in person before. Like I never saw like a high school track that had like a fucking pool area.
Someone insists that you can do steeplechase in high school.
Okay,
we saw that.
But it's fascinating because it's another element than just running.
The event originated in Ireland.
Okay.
Horses and riders raced from one town's steeple to the next.
Yes, but on horseback. This is not horseback.
Along the way, runners inevitably had to jump streams. And it said riders. Oh, horses and riders. I don't know.
They adapted it.
Yeah. Along the way, the runners, see, I mean, within one sentence, they have changed from horses and riders to runners. So over time, it changed to just people.
I'm still trying to find the the modern pentathlon, which is, again, shooting, horseback riding, swimming, fencing, and am I missing one? Running. So Frank says, because you were a scout, like in the Napoleonic era, that was simulating how hard it was. Like you're on your horse, your horse gets shot out from under you. Then you gotta fight a guy, fencing face to face. Then you gotta like shoot someone. I'm like, that's actually pretty freaking cool.
Wow,
to do all these different events.
Random history, Olympic history for you. Since the 1968 Summer Olympics, the men's steeplechase has been dominated by Kenyan athletes
until last night.
Yeah.
They didn't get first or second.
That's crazy.
I think they got the bronze. Yeah.
Gold medal streak from 88 through 2016.
Not anymore. Kenyans. It was a guy from, somewhere in North Africa, I think. I'm trying to remember. They were shocked. Not shocked, but they like, okay, this guy's pretty good at it. But like,
so the Kenyans have lost steeplechase. That means we're gonna fucking screw up basketball. Here it
goes. Oh, I think it's happening like right now, or it's already happened. Would that happen already?
I don't know, but I'm saying it's probably going to happen.
And this is the CU Olympics podcast.
Yeah.
You think there's some podcasts that just cover the Olympics every 2 years?
Probably is.
Well, we got a short layoff. After this, there's 4 months later, it begins again. This is over 5 months later.
France won 84-75.
So we're not getting a medal. Heads.
That's France versus Italy. I'm sorry.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Sorry. I'll say if we don't get a medal at least, heads will roll.
Sorry. If France versus Italy was today and France won.
Okay. Yeah, we're facing
I thought we were facing France.
I thought we were too. We're saying Spain. Spain. Spain's one of the top three. Or they're like second, Spain. US, Spain. Yeah, this is touch and go this year
Yesterday, U.S. won 95-81.
Against who?
Spain.
Oh, so we're in the semis.
Yeah.
Okay, I missed. This is the problem with the time things. They show this stuff late at night. It already happened 12 fucking hours before. It's the next day because Japan is ahead of us by like 15 or 17 hours. It's damn these time zones. Why can't we just have one time zone? Just one
universe. Just fucking deal with it.
Yeah, if it's dark out at noon, hey, it's your problem. Move somewhere else.
Move elsewhere.
Move where the sun is.
Midnight is the new noon wherever you are. It's fine.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, that's fun.
Yeah.
So I watched Masters of the Universe.
Three episodes.
I tried to get in the fourth. It was late. I fell asleep. I popped the CBD. It's okay. It's not my style. I think this is like a modern style of cartoon that I'm not into. Sort of like the Voltron style of cartoon. I like the Voltron series where they like pull you with the writing. They pull you out of the setting. I'll just say that there's a lot of things that happen just with the writing itself where the characters seem like they're in the modern world with things they say, but it's not in the modern world. It's whatever. It's fucking Eternia. And I don't like that. The immersion quality goes away when there's like a pithy, cute statement by someone that's like you would never hear that any of the other characters say that. But I do like the battles were cool. I liked how they worked in a lot of these minor characters just to throw them in there. Oh, they throw in Stinkor just for a cameo, basically.
It was
for
fun no to reason. See.
I will say this though, Bet. I don't remember Teela being this unlikable in the original cartoon. She is not the protagonist, at least how she's written. She did a lot of like weird whining in the first few episodes. And the whole crux of it is that she feels, I guess, betrayed, that she was lied to, that no one told her that Adam was He-Man, even though like Adam did not want to tell anyone and swore people to secrecy. That's the crux of her getting pissed off and leaving Eternia as the present man of arms. That used to be her dad, that she calls her dad Duncan, which is weird. I always get weird out when someone calls their parents by their first name, even in a cartoon.
It's a little strange.
It's a little weird to do that. It's disrespectful. Come on, Teela. Come on. Man in Arms has a great mustache. What are you doing? It's legendary. The figure didn't have a mustache, though, which always bothered me. The figure was like nothing on the figure. It always threw me off. Yeah. Anyway, so they make Teela bitter, which I didn't like that. There's ways to show her that she's over Eternia without making her totally bitter for such a weird reason. It's like Adam just gave his life. I'm going to make it about me. That's the way it came off, and that was weird. They're trying to make her soften her up in the other episodes. She finally, you know, I think they got off on the wrong foot with Teela. I like the second character they had, the friend character, the tech gal.
Mm-hmm.
That they had. That's a decent character. But Teela's not likable. You have to have a likable protagonist. I think they could have like gotten to that point, I think, a little bit differently, where they had her be bitter and leave. And she's like she's supposed to be like the protector of the realm, and she turns her back on everything. It's just a very selfish reason that I didn't buy it there. I just didn't buy it. Skeletor was cool, obviously Mark Hamill voicing it. He-Man's He-Man, you know. And I guess I'll see where it goes the last two episodes. But overall I think it's all right. I'm not in love with it. I do like I like working in the cameos, and the thing about Evil Lyn trying to make Evil Lyn likable, I'm just kind of, they do this with a lot of these things where they try to make the villains like likable and give them like a backstory. But I don't know. That's just not for me to do that.
A character have depth.
No, it's not just it's not depth. It's just that, wow, like they try to play off the fact that, well, her name's Evil Lyn, and then they had like a heart to heart with Orko, and I think that's when I tapped out. The Evil Lyn heart to heart with Orko was like, this is so weird on so many levels. And I sort of tapped out at that point. Like, okay, it's like, it's almost like a formula they do, I think, with some of these cartoons where, like, I don't need super depth. I don't need my villain humanized to the point where I got to rethink why Evil Lyn was acting in my children's cartoon in the 80s. Like, I don't need that.
But so, you don't have to think that. You can just watch it.
No, but they're throwing it in your face constantly. Well, I was working for Skeletor, but it wasn't furthering my own needs. And it's like, dude, this is a children's cartoon. You're a sidekick, like Beastman.
But it's not at this point.
But that's why this is a weird thing in general.
All right.
You're trying to make it an adult cartoon when it never was supposed to be. And you run into pitfalls, like I said, like the Teela thing. We're making Teela a bitter heroine when she wasn't ever bitter originally. And it's just, yeah. But the action's cool. Mark Hamill did a great job. They throw in Scareglow, which is a cool character. I don't think was ever in the original cartoon. Now is a figure I had as a kid that's now worth a ton of money.
Scareglow?
He's like a glow-in-the-dark looking Skeletor. The skin was glow-in-the-dark. And now it's like one of the most popular figures. And I fucking had it as a kid. Now it's that figure's like $100.
Wow.
It's one of the later ones. It came out in like 80, I want to say 87 or so, like on the backslide of the life of the tail end of the toy line, basically.
Yeah.
Like that and Mosquito are like two of the most popular figures that are worth money, but they were like not cartoon guys. I don't think they were like after the cartoon. You know, Mosquito with the mosquito face. Because mm-hmm. these are ones that people love. I'm like, wow, these are like one of the probably the last figures I had as a kid when she got to like 86, 87. Then I was out of He-Man and I transitioned just to G.I. Joe, pre Ninja Turtles. So yeah, that's my Master of the Universe card. It's fine. It's not perfect, obviously. And it's actually a little more violent than I thought it'd be. I don't know what's going to happen in the last two episodes. I was kind of surprised about the violence in it.
Sure.
Not gore over the top, but I'm like trying to square this being a kid's cartoon. It's like, I guess if they brought back G.I. Joe, there'd be people being shot in the face, I guess. Happened in the comics. The comics, G.I. Joe with comics was violent. People were getting shot and killed. So, all right.
Moving on.
I pre-ordered the Playdate.
Yeah, I did too.
I was shopping at Sprouts, and Ian says, oh, I ordered it. You better get your order. And by the time I came home and ordered it, the first batch of 20,000 was gone. 20 minutes they sold out.
20 minutes, 20,000, 1,000 a minute. Doing math.
Ian math.
Doing math right now, right here, hot and live. The pre-order process for me was really straightforward and easy. I would love to applaud them on that. They did have problems with international shipping. That was a big issue where I guess a lot of people were locked out.
Big issue?
No, Pat.
It wasn't a big issue, though.
It was a big issue.
And I think they said I had to do like the plug-in or something they were using.
So I think they were using Shopify, and basically they had, what I had read, they had basically warned Shopify and said, hey, we're doing this. And Shopify was like, okay. And the tests appeared like everything was going to be fine. And I guess some other company that used Shopify also did a big product launch at the exact same time.
And it broke the server or whatever.
And
or
it broke the server. And so there was shipping calculator issues, which is also, oddly enough, shipping calculator was where people pointed to problems when Analog did the Pocket pre-orders. People were getting hung up on the shipping calculator.
So something with that going on with either Shopify or
I don't think both of them were Shopify, but yeah, it seems like when problems arise, they happen at the shipping calculator.
Because everyone's getting hit at the same time, the servers, and they go wacky. Yeah.
So the word is, I believe they sold something like 70,000 within the first 24 hours.
That's insane.
That's crazy. Obviously, you know, much more interest in this thing than I think they had originally thought. I think they kind of got to the... I think they set themselves up properly. They said they were, you know, I think a year now, they've been saying they're going to do 20,000. That's going to be the first run. Well, they don't think they're going to sell out. But it definitely seemed like the excitement level of this thing was getting point where they were going to go beyond 20K.
This is what they actually said, Playdate. That was their wait list tweet from 2 years ago. I put in 70,000. That's what came up. I'm trying to see where the 70,000 came from on this. Well, they had 70,000 people on their wait list 2 years ago. So that makes if that translates to 70,000 sales, that's like a really high.
Yeah, I don't know. I had seen 70,000 in a couple articles. I thought that I did not put down. So take that with a grain of salt. I don't have the.
But it's a lot. If they do 20,000 in 20 minutes,
yeah.
My order was 23,000 roughly. So I'm going to be the 23,000th play date. So I'll get the one in the second batch in, I guess, Q1 2022. You know.
So
I'm annoyed because like I was excited about this, and I'm like, I don't want to miss the games as they come out.
This is what I was going to bring up. Yeah, you don't want to miss the games.
I mean, you're going to get them, but like
I want to be part of the
experience.
Yeah, that's part of the
culture.
That's the main thing that I think will need to be seen is how exciting is it going to be for the people who get them after the fact.
To have 12 games dumped on there.
Who didn't get to be part of the initial release. Obviously, these games should be good enough to stand on their own and be amusing no matter what. Yeah. But there is, I mean, a big part of what appealed to me about the Playdate and a big part of what made me excited to get in on that initial batch was the release, the way they're releasing the games. And Frank Cifaldi even said the same thing in a tweet. You know, basically, the exciting thing is we're all going to be playing these games at the same time.
Yeah.
And
commenting on it.
Like you do with Prestige TV or something like that. It's the first time where, and it's going to be fast. It's going to be every week. It's going to keep the conversation going. So it's going to be very interesting to see how
6 months of games,
20 months. They're doing two games a week. It's three months.
Oh, it's two games. But I thought it was one a week.
Okay. It was one a week until they expanded the first season, and now it's two games a week. Oh, but it's still 3 months.
I would have kept it one a week, and you just expand it out.
Still 3 weeks.
Hey, Playdate, I'm not saying I got to help you with marketing. I would keep it one a week, because then you can expand out.
I'm sure they have thought about it.
I'm just saying. I'm here.
I'm happy with two, so thanks.
Because with two, you're going to have probably one be dominant. I don't want people comparing the games. Oh, this one's better than this one. Like, that's going to happen now just because people are stupid. I don't want that.
People will live and learn.
People don't learn.
People do.
We're not going to get out of this pandemic because people don't learn.
Let me make my statement. The last thing I wanted to say about Playdate was they said that they're trying to figure out something for the international market, a way to kind of make right. So I don't know if they're going to portion off a chunk of the next run and open pre-orders just for those to international orders or what they're going to do. But they have said that they do plan on doing something for the people who felt slighted by the fact that they could not place their order, even though they were in line and ready at the right time. So
thankfully
we'll see.
There's not, I only saw like one or two on eBay, people trying to scalp their first $390 for the 2021 release. Go after yourself. I hope they find you and cancel your pre-order. Find out who you are.
Yeah.
I only saw one. That's why open pre-orders are great. Did you get the little, I get the little cover. I didn't care if it was a little upsell. I got the little cover.
Yeah, no, I got the cover.
Like 15 bucks, whatever it was.
It was $9 if you bought it as a package.
They bundled it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just got it. I'm going to get the stupid little speaker thing. It looks cute.
Mm-hmm. I will too.
You hooked me, Playdate. You hooked me. You hooked me. I'm going to say that. And of course, you have people's, I know why people are going out of their way, some idiots, to say why they don't like it that much. And it's like, there's obviously lots of interest in this. This has been hugely successful. You know, like, if this goes for a year on this, I mean, maybe they sell hundreds of thousands of these. Like, you don't know where this ends up. That's for an independent game console, that's incredibly successful. And they're doing it in such a way with these simple games that they can keep an ecosystem going for a long while. Plus, people making their own games, they could tap into the community. Like, this is going to be around for years now. They've tapped into something. And obviously, other little mini handhelds have had their own little, you know, their own little ecosystems in a way. But they hit upon something here.
It doesn't have cornhole, so how good can it possibly do?
Ian, my heart's still aching. Don't joke about that. Don't joke. That's some things we don't joke. It's too soon. It's too soon to joke about cornhole, Ian. Now you get thrown off the rest of the podcast. Congratulations to our pal Chris Bucci, Spida1A on YouTube, for the final Turbo Views episode. Chris has been doing.
That's a lot of them.
Since I think he told me 2008 was the first episode. It wasn't branded Turbo Views until 2009. So 12, 13 years, 135. Every North American TurboGrafx-16 and CD game. A great review with his great little quirky sense of humor and good information. Really dives into the nuts and bolts and the details and behind-the-scenes stuff. And the same style of video from 12 years. The same style of video.
Yeah, I haven't watched a lot of the recent ones, but Turbo Views was one of the very few YouTube game related series that I ever watched. I liked his presentation. Fun guy to talk to too, and he knows a lot about pinball, so
yeah,
I'm happy for him.
He's gonna do other videos. Obviously his last one, it was Ease 3, was his the last episode. I asked if we're gonna get the 3 bikini CD games. That don't count, unfortunately. Those wouldn't be funny as a bonus episode. Local Hawaiian girls, I always forget the 3 names, because they're like bikini girls or whatever, and there's like a third one. I do own one sealed, by the way. Gotta get that graded.
So Dr. Mario World will be unplayable after November 1st, which gives it what? It had a 2-year run?
A good 2-year run.
Yeah, seems very strange.
I played it for like 2 weeks. I wasn't into it.
I liked it well enough from what I understand.
And I played it longer than Mario Kart Tour, World Tour.
I don't play a lot of phone games, but from what I understand, Dr. Mario World was very similar to Candy Crush.
It was a match 3.
It's right. It's different. I mean, it is. It's different with how the bubbles work and stuff like that. It was unique. I enjoyed it. I played, I think, through all of the free levels.
Sure.
I played it, which was quite a bit. It gave you quite a bit. And then I kept up on it for like a week, but I stopped. I never go back to my phone for gaming. Interesting, though, that Nintendo's calling it in. I feel like that's relatively quick. But maybe the money wasn't there for them. I don't understand. It's weird to me that games are instead of just leaving it up there, it's going to be unplayable.
I don't know.
That's weird. I mean, how much money does it cost you to keep the game up and running?
I'd love to see like them looking at, okay, well, it costs us this amount of man hours and this amount of time. It's not worth it. Or they don't want to farm it out to someone else to track it. I don't know. But, you know, it is weird. Now we're going to get to the point where even Nintendo stuff, 2 years, then it's unplayable. Hopefully someone could like, you know, find a way to keep it playable, make their own server to connect it. I don't know. This is a game preservation issue, obviously. That's becoming more and more prevalent. It's only a 10-year issue. We only had smartphones for only a little over 10 years.
Yeah. But so the English account for Dr. Mario World did announce that there's one final world. It's got thunder and lightning, and it's purple and spooky looking.
Thunder!
So, you know, I think it's like one last world full of very challenging levels, and that's it. So,
you know what's always going to be up? UltimateNintendo.com will always be available. The servers ain't going down. There you can get NES and Super Nintendo guidebooks, RBI baseball stickers from a roll of 2,000 of them, not 2,000 anymore, roughly, and enamel pins.
Yeah.
Was that a better transition last week, Ian?
It was a fine transition, but it didn't tickle my funny bone like some of them have.
Oh, are you going to start rating these?
Yeah. I mean,
you're going to start rating these?
I already have been in my head. I mean, obviously, I'm judging them.
Wow.
I'm silently judging the entire podcast.
No, it's not silent anymore.
It's not.
You're verbalizing
outlaw, verbalized
it.
Judgment.
It's verbalized judgment. It's very hurtful.
Spitting facts.
Just like your cornhole.
Cornhole.
I don't want. I'm gonna fucking beep out the word. My heart is torn up. My heart is torn like a beanbag from cornhole. It's torn.
Oh.
And the beans are flying all around.
Wow.
Now it's torn asunder. Shuri Bear, who's a speedrunner.
Oh, this is impressive. This is good
stuff.
Yeah,
Ian skipped this for some reason before to go to Dr. Mario World.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, you did.
Whoops. I didn't mean to.
Yeah, okay. You didn't mean to insult me either with the cornhole. So the first ever that we know of. He even says that we know of. I'm sure some crazy kid tried this in the late 80s, early 90s. The first ever playthrough of Ninja Gaiden using Mattel's Power Glove.
Yeah.
And it's incredible.
It is. You should definitely watch this. Give it a shot. Just to see what the guy's working with in terms of like how he has to play this. Very like exaggerated movements.
Yeah, the Power Glove works. People don't want to ever set it up and get the bars going. The Power Glove works, but it's shoddy. That's the problem. You can't really use it for many games and actually be competitive. That's the problem.
Yeah, you're not going to get like, you know, the one-to-one movement or...
Well, it's just that it's not going to be precise. Like, I mean, yeah. or quick enough to even do like Rad Racer probably.
So just running back and forth, he's wildly swinging his hand.
Yeah, you have to move left it and like right. 2 feet. But like you flick your finger for jump and flick the second one for, you know, to slice. And I'm not even sure how he used... he wasn't even using the B plus up power-ups because I don't know how the hell you would do that. In this game, trying to think about how you have to hold like a finger and flick up to do that. So of course, what gives him the most problems, which gives me problems to everyone, is stage 6-2 is a fucking nightmare. Yes. With the flying ninjas, somehow with jetpacks throwing stars at you while the birds are flying at you. And it's so incredibly unfair at that stage. And that's the hardest part of the game. And that's not even like the end of the game. It's close to the end. It's like most of the way through, but... And he took like 20 minutes on that. It only took him an hour, 10 minutes to do this, by the way. He flew through some errors, or flew as much as you can, because when you're a speedrunner...
I mean, I'm sure there's some practice involved.
Well, when you're a speedrunner, you know how to do avoidance. And so, like, if you're just running forward and jumping and slide, like... But for the precise movements back and forth, that's where it's impressive. Like, I didn't even... I'm going to look at him try to do the final boss right now with this and see how he even does it. I guess you can run up and just jump and slice. I was never that good with the final boss in terms of the timing. I was just, like, spam it and then hopefully win. You know, I wasn't good there, but let's see. Yeah, he just went up and just used the jump and slash.
Yeah.
The jump and slash. Yeah, he used the jump and slash. So he held on to it. That's my problem when I play Ninja Gaiden, is that I never know. I always screw myself and get rid of the jump and slash, which is the overpowered power-up, which helps you through 90% of the game. And as a speedrunner, he knows where it is and not where to jump and hit to get rid of that power-up, so that helped him. I'm not diminishing his comment, but I'm saying jump and slash makes Ninja Gaiden a lot easier, obviously. Oh, he played the Japanese version for some reason. Interesting. So
I wonder why.
Good for you, Shuri Bear. Good for you, buddy. Good job. You can see it was hard. I don't know if this is the first time the first time he did it. Like he did it live in stream. And yeah, I mean, it takes me an hour. It probably takes me longer to beat Ninja Gaiden than it took him to use the Power Glove. Anyway. A Tetris board game, Ian, is interesting.
Yeah, so there's going to be a Tetris board game coming out. I don't know a whole lot about it. It was interesting, though, because I saw it and it reminded me of the fact that this is not the first Tetris board game. I had one when I was a kid. And I don't know if this is just like a remake of it or how it actually plays, but it's visually appealing at the very least. It comes with like four clear... four like clear plastic bins or pits with stands, and you can put the pieces on them and it looks like they clip in. So I'm not exactly sure how you play it, but it's neat. It's neat looking.
So what do you go back and forth to see like you, I guess if there's more than one player, it'll say, okay, you both get different pieces and you try to do your own puzzles in order to.
Yeah.
How do you easily get rid of the lines? Is there like a little line thing?
I don't know. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, honestly. I think with the one that I had when I was a kid, now I'm not sure that we ever played it properly, but I think it was more about seeing how many pieces you could fit on the board.
Okay, there's a set of cards for victory conditions. 6 completed rows, four pairs of matching and connected tetrominoes, 4 completed rows by playing that one awesome long tetromino. God, I hate that. You get the idea. That's what it says. You get the idea. So there's a victory condition for each round. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because obviously you don't want to, you know, slice off pieces of your little Tetris pieces.
No, no.
So that's cool.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it'll play, but I think it's pretty. It's nice.
By the way, I'll be on Twitch Wednesdays, twitch.tv/ContraCode. Forgot to plug that there. In television, out there in television Europe, Hans Ippich was like the head of like the European division out in Germany, posted a video showing off a sneak peek. Sneak peeks spelled properly for once, which is good. Mm. They figured out that's what's called a homonym, the word peek.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds the same, two different spellings and meanings. Sneak peek. So went to the factory. I believe someone told me it's in Poland, the factory. They're manufacturing what's called physical products for the Intellivision Amico, because they're way past the point where they probably can legally claim it's physical media, even though the CEO was saying forever that it's physical media when it's not. It's physical products. So they show boxes being shrink-wrapped in the factory. There's eight games, Dyna Blaster, Biplanes, was it Astro Smash, Brain Duel, Missile Command, Biplanes, Rigid Force Redux, Finnegan Fox, Evil Knievel, My Nemesis, Dyna Blaster, and there's another one. So I think they're doing the first run of 50,000 of these things. Months before this is supposed to be out. So you ask yourself, why are they doing this?
I mean, months after it was supposed to be out.
Well, yeah, 10 months after the original.
We really need to stop acting like this has not missed two release dates and is about to miss a third.
So this is what I think is going on here. Because this isn't coming out in October. And I'm not sure why they're delaying that. I think they're trying to pump up this news in order to cover the fact that they're going to delay it. Like, oh, here's a shiny object. We got boxes filled with RFID cards, but we're not. But you won't be able to use them in any system. But so I think they're going to try to sell these to the collectors, to the people on Atari age, and the people that are like diehard fans of this for some reason, and Tommy's fans. They need money to support the company, probably to keep it afloat. So they're going to sell. These are $20 each they're going to cost.
This is a round of funding. That's what this is. This is a round of funding.
It's going to be some sort of funding. And I think they're going to try to sell these. There's I'm sure most of the people are going to buy every single one. So that's $160 gross revenue. Some people will probably buy two. They'll keep one in their sealed like collector, and they'll spend $320 to get 16 of them.
Can't wait till we see WADA graded Intellivision Amico games.
Yeah. They're going to try to bank probably on, maybe they're going to get an influencer to open one up and show it off. I'm trying to feign how they're going to be excited about this.
Tom has been saying for months now that he's got a very special reveal plan that's going to showcase it to millions of viewers.
My head hurts thinking about how bad this is. I'm not even trying to be like disparaging. My head hurts about how bad a situation this is for this company at this point. But it's really weird that you would do this sneak peek before you announce that your console where you use your physical product on is delayed. It's just like, what are you gonna wait till like October 1st to say it's not coming out? What are you waiting for?
It's also weird that a sneak peek literally just showed boxes being sealed and did not show what's inside, because everything's got to be secret. Everything's got to be dripped out. Everything's got to be held off for those in the know.
And if this influencer, whoever they spend money on to show this off, which will not be interested in this otherwise, obviously, how possibly do you think their audience would care? If they have millions of followers, they're not the generation that grew up with the Intellivision, obviously. These are Zoomers and younger folks. They're going to look at this and laugh. Like, what is this? Like, what is this? Wow, it's a card. You're getting a card in a box.
I think the best case scenario for this is it's going to have a non-expirable license. Basically, the only thing I could see being even remotely unique about this is that if you tap it, it's not a one and done, is what
it's
I'm saying.
It's not a one and done.
So that maybe you can resell it.
But then that'd be piracy, though, at that point.
Well, I almost have a feeling that they're willing to deal with a little bit of piracy to say that they have something.
Then
unique.
Again, you won't find someone in the same town that has an Amico, so it probably doesn't matter.
So that's I think that might be the one thing that's up the sleeve, is that you can use it on yours, you can use it on your friends, maybe you can sell it back. But at the end of the day, the problem comes down to if you need an internet connection to download this, it's not what people want.
Just spend half the money and buy it at the store then. If you really want Evil Knievel, spend whatever it got. It's gonna be $10 for what's free on mobile. Spend the $10, not $20 to get a fucking lenticular card or whatever it's probably gonna be. in order to send the signal to tell it to download it from whatever. It downloads to your console, then unlocks from your console, whatever, however it's going to work. Because obviously most of these games are small or smallish, you know. It's bizarre, but the system's coming out in October. So at this point, it's still coming out in October.
I'll say this. I really don't mind the design on the boxes. I think the artist they hired did a pretty decent job.
Yeah, it's obviously a mix of the old painted style.
Yeah.
Modernized. No, I'm not going to
kill
him on
that. I'm not taking shots at the people who are just doing their job. I'm just taking shots at Tom.
It looks like a Digipack.
It is. And I'm one of the few people that actually likes Digipacks.
That's how I do my DVDs, the Digipacks.
I like Digipacks. I like the art. Not a lot of room in there to hide goodies, though. They've already said that there's more than just a code.
What do you mean? What goodies? They put in like Cracker Jack prizes? What do you mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
What can you fit in there? A sticker?
But they've said there's more than just the game in there. There's
a manual? A manual?
I think Tom said that they weren't doing manuals.
You can't even do manuals? On your physical, physical product?
I feel like in this day and age, if you're going to make a big deal about doing a special edition physical, you've got to put a printed manual in. That's one of the reasons, that's one of the things that people always mention about the Evercade releases is, hey, they come in nice plastic clamshells and they have full color manuals.
Yeah, okay,
people like that shit.
I got one right here. Look at the cute little manual. And it tells you about all the games in it. Look at I turned the Mappy, case in point.
Turned the Mappy. Full color manual, an actual cartridge that goes in the system that doesn't require an internet connection, and a plastic case.
There's only like one page per game or sometimes two, but at least you're getting something here.
You get something, and they're nicely laid out and designed.
No, they're cute. They're adorable. They're adorable.
All right, I'm done talking. I don't want to talk about the Amico anymore. It makes me sad.
I'm not recovering from this cornhole thing anytime soon.
Yeah, I know.
Hole in my heart that can only be filled by cornhole.
There's a hole in my heart that can only be filled by you.
Hey, Pat Ian, fuck you.
Oh. Yeah. All right.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
All right, we got a podcast, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Ian, we have an update to the...
Update.
From Polymega themselves. Play Magi? Play Magi?
Play Magi. Play Magi. Play...
To the upcoming, way delayed, late modular... emulation-based retro console.
August 2nd, 2021, for immediate release. Polymega is launching officially on September 12th. I don't know what launch date number this is for them, but it's coming out. They had apparently suffered many, many, many delays due to civil unrest in Myanmar and problems with COVID. We've talked about this before. I don't really feel like shitting on them anymore. I will just say that I found that their communication method, their communication to be severely lacking, and most people did too. On the other hand, I think they realized that they had maybe talked them. They had done so much talking and so much saying this month, next month, a couple months, that I do think there is something to be said about just not saying anything until you have something to say, which is what they did. They came out of nowhere and they were like, all right, we've got a bunch of these we got our first shipment in the warehouse and we're going to be sending them out soon. I don't think that's a good thing to do for most businesses, but after the amount of talking that Playmagi did, I don't think there was much more that they could say. Well, either way, I don't think the whole thing has looked like a mess.
When you say the amount of talking they did, they haven't talked in like a year and a half. What do you mean?
Well, because they kept delaying it and delaying it and delaying it. So I think by waiting until they had something in their hands, it made sense. I'm not saying I'm not saying anything looks good. I think you're taking this as too much of a compliment. But they've announced it and it's getting released. So, and if you care, yay.
As a reminder, you'll be getting it. This was supposed to come out in 2019 somewhere.
2019. Like, it was announced initially in 2016, I think.
I saw the prototype at SoCal Retro Gaming Expo. That was like Super Bowl weekend 2017. Four and a half years ago, I saw the prototype.
And it was originally supposed to be called Retro Blocks, right?
It was Retro Blocks back then. Then there was some trademark thing. They had to change it to Poly Mega. But this has been in development for probably over half a decade.
When this was announced, I wanted to see pricing and stuff like that. But when it was announced, it was originally supposed to be an extremely accurate, modular, HDMI-compatible solution for basically modern gaming or retro gaming on modern TVs.
Yeah, it started off as it was, this might be like an FPGA thing. And people were like, oh, this would be interesting.
As time went on, it changed its name, and the basic idea behind it changed too. There was the, I think, kind of laughable announcement that they were using hybrid emulation.
So a lot of the first ire came when right when they were announcing when the pre-orders were happening. They said, "Oh, this isn't FPGA. This is hybrid emulation." So they claimed that it was going to be like some sort of FPGA thing for like how the controller input got to the emulator, but there were still emulators there. So people were thrown for a loop at that point. They're like, wait a minute. This is what you were talking up.
People felt like they weren't being sold what they were. They weren't being sold what was advertised initially. And they also got into some heat with there was a little back and forth between them and Analog. And I like Analog's products. I don't always love how Analog's always done everything. But Analog, at least, even at that point in time, already had a history of releasing a couple of items. I think the NT Mini had been out, and I think the... I think maybe even the SNES, the SG.
The Super NT. And the Mega SG was on the way. Because Mega SG's already been out for, what, over 2 years at this point?
Yeah.
It had to do with, I think they were like, they took a little shot at Analog because, like, the 32X CD games on the Mega SG weren't all compatible or something. There was like a handful of games that weren't going to be working on the Mega SG. That's how I know the timing of that. And they're like... Well, but it's FPGA though; it's not emulation. So, like, why would you take a shot at a competitor who has shipped products out? Like, there's no reason to do that.
Yeah, they lashed out because people were angry at them suddenly changing the basic concept of what the system was from FPGA to emulation.
Yeah,
once you've got emulation in there, there's no hybrid emulation. It's emulation.
Analog's the gold standard. Some people don't like it for some weird reason. Analog's the gold standard with these consoles now. They are. For the aftermarket way to play original physical media, they are the gold standard.
Problematically, this started out as a pretty interesting idea,
When I saw it in person, I talked to the guys, they were nice, and I was like, yeah, because we always talked about we need a CD, and that was the CD, remember the CD, they tried to do that. We need a CD-based system to replay the CD games, because there wasn't one. For PlayStation, for Sega CD, for PC Engine CD, for Saturn, we need something to play these. They don't exist. There's no Hyperkin version. There's no Retrobit version. So on that alone, I was interested.
Well, in addition to that, at that point in time, there weren't really any HDMI out options either. Directly, at least cheaply affordable ones. The Hyperkin Retro series did not come out until after the. Polymega Retro Blocks was announced. So all I'm trying to say is when they announced this, they were a fairly unique item in the market. As time has gone on, they have lost that uniqueness. Yeah. Now Hyperkin has, cheap HDMI out options that are cheaper than the modules. The modules alone, you need the base system, but the modules alone for the Polymega are expensive. So you have... You have the options through Hyperkin. You have more options now through Analog.
Well, the first was Pound Cable. Pound cables came out and were just like, okay, you have your own consoles. Here's an HDMI upscale cable, and they're inexpensive. They're like 20 to 30 bucks, and they came out with original Xbox. They came out with I think Dreamcast and PS1.
Pound cables are not well loved. But, yes.
Well, there's been improvements. They've been out for years now. I'm looking at the PS2 one has 4.5 stars on Amazon. So, the point is they led the way. Hyperkin then did their cables. other methods came in to start filling in these gaps.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because back when Polymega announced what they were doing, the only options were fairly high-end upscalers, like the Framemeister.
Sure.
Now you've got your RetroTINKs at 100. You've got all these different hookup cables for the Sega Genesis, for the Nintendo, the Super Nintendo. All I'm getting at is the market is not where it was when this was announced. The market is now flooded with opportunities to play your old systems via HDMI.
Yeah, I think people are satisfied with the pound cables now, looking at the ratings, by the way. I'm just looking at them. I mean, we're talking about three and a half years after they first came out. So there's been improvements, obviously. So the point is this. At the start, there wasn't a good solution at the time to use your original physical media to play these games outside of, you know, like the Retron 5, where you had like a multiple console setup. You know, there wasn't a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah, the Retron 5 was the first of the Retron systems to do the HDMI.
And that was what, early 2017?
Probably.
Was
maybe even 2016.
Yeah, I was still in Castle Country. That's how I know I did the review. 2016 or early 2017, something like that. So a lot happened in 4 years. And now when you have multiple delays, it's like, okay, I can understand the delays once you get to the pandemic, but it was supposed to come out before the pandemic.
Right.
It was supposed to come out 2 years, you know, a year and a half before the pandemic basically hit. So like, you basically caused your own separate issue there. Then the cost went up as well, and that annoyed people, you know. So the base unit, I always said the base unit, I might have been in for like a couple hundred bucks, for, you know, just for the disc games. I didn't need the modules necessarily.
Sure.
You were going to sell me on getting every $60 or $80 module.
But I believe it ended up being over $400 for the final. For the disc based, the final price for the disc based module,
and it was three originally, right? It was 300.
I think it was originally supposed to be 300, and then it got up to 400, and now I think it's slightly more.
So, they're I'm trying to find the store on their website. Can I even order it right now? Shop.
I think you might be able to order it, but that's the other thing that this announcement doesn't.
It's $449 now.
Yeah.
So it's gone up. Pat math, 50% from the original price of 300. That's a 50% increase. Wow, $449. What happened with this project? There's a lot of probably a lot of turnover behind the scenes, I'm guessing, in terms of devs. I don't know if they misuse money. I can't say that. But like, when you have a 50% increase in your price of your production, that's massive.
I just wonder maybe if some bloat occurred. The operating system looks nice, but it also looks almost overdone.
But
I'm just wondering, did development costs for the software end up getting so bloated that they had to charge more for the hardware?
For the most part, though, it's a front end, right? It's front end.
Yes, it's a front end.
Those exist. Our pals at Launchbox, you know, emulator front ends, they exist. They're probably not complicated to at least license one or alter one. That's sticker shock. At $449, this is dead in the water. I mean, it's dead. I don't see anyone, and that because you have to be on, you have to, oh, remember, you have to be on board for the base unit, and then the modules on top of that.
I believe if you want to check, I believe the modules are 80.
And then they originally were, I think, were 60 originally, the modules, and they came with the controller. They're $80 now.
So this is what I'm getting at. If this isn't FPGA and your desire is to play NES games, you know, this is it's a tall order at $449 for the base model plus $80 for the...
This is then $770 to get all four modules, the base unit, and then there's going to be shipping and tax. You're going to look at like $850 to $900.
Yes.
That's insane.
When, if all you wanted, like I said, if you wanted to just do some NES games, the standalone Hyperkin Retron HD, which plenty of people hate and plenty of people love, but whatever, it that exists for someone. There's a market for it, believe me. $39.99. So even their modules aren't particular. They're expensive. What I'm saying is, you can get all, other than the disc.
You can buy separate systems.
You can do separate systems that are going to do
the modules.
This. Yeah, they're less than the modules.
I mean, the modules are pass-throughs. The modules are basically just.
You can get a Retron.
Foreign readers.
You can get a Retron 3 HD doing super. Regular and Genesis for $90. The modules are crazy overpriced.
The modules are just a board reader for that console, the same way that the Retron 5 had multiple board readers for several consoles, and the controller port pass-through. That's all you're doing with these modules. So it's a shame. I'm not wishing ill will on this because I think some people were excited about this. But once you get years into a project like this, the technology passes you by. Other cheaper options come out. We have so many even mod options that are available. We talk about the Saturn, and things like that. Where you
got the one the optical drive emulators.
Yeah,
the market solutions. Has changed. And yes, I've not always been kind to Polymega for a lot of the reasons. I don't think their communication was great, etc. But I do think there was a market for this at one point, and the technology has passed it, and the price point.
You can't have technology pass you by, cheaper options, and then we're going to raise the price 50%, 50% on the base unit. Not like 20%, 25%, 50%. Like you say, oh, well, the Playdate increased their price. Yeah, they increased their price by like, I don't know, 10%, I think?
They increased it from 150 to 179, but they didn't increase it with nothing. They added 12 more games.
But even, I would say 30 divided by 150. That's a 20% increase. That's not 50%. And you're getting more stuff. So like,
yeah, it's not just an increase with nothing added.
So we're not going to kill you because yes, there's a pandemic. Parts are harder to get or there are more money. You can get parts, by the way. Other companies will claim you can get the parts you want. You have to just pay a little bit more for them. That's why, these products are still coming out. That's why you're still going to get the Playdate. That's why you're getting the Analog Pocket. You can still get this stuff made for the most part. But this is just like it's sort of like a what if. It's going to become like a what if. Like, what if this did come out, say, early 2019 or whenever it was supposed to come out originally? Because I can't keep track anymore when this was supposed to come out. I mean, probably originally they wanted this thing out in 2018. If I was looking at a prototype with the real shell in 2017, this has been developed probably a year before that. Once you get to 5 years when a project's not out, my God.
I mean, yeah.
For hardware?
So I think that this is... I'd be surprised if they continue going after this is launched. I have a feeling they're going to get those units out into people's hands. They've said that some people aren't going to get their units until 2022. But can they maintain enough product to actually run this as a business after it launches? And that's my question.
This is what from the press release that came out via Nintendojo, which I love that name. PlayMage CEO Brian Bernal said, despite the challenging shipping environment presented by the COVID-19 pandemic starting last year and other factors beyond our control at our Myanmar assembly facility, our team is excited to finally reach this critical release milestone. And further, we're beyond grateful to our thousands of customers who stuck with us and believe in the vision of Polymega and what it can mean for the future of the video games industry. Okay. The vision of the Polymega, I don't even know what the vision is. Like, what is the vision at this point? The vision is you use your original software with an emulator. It's like Analog has four products now with an FPGA. There's going to be a fifth one next year with the Duo.
Mm-hmm.
They're really ramping up the solutions. And if I buy, I mean, obviously it's hard. I mean, the NT Noir and the Mini NT goes for a ton of money to stop making them. But, $200 per console for a real FPGA, people have said that that's acceptable.
Yeah.
Plus, I think there's something to be said for having, a nice design form for each of those consoles as well versus, these plug-in. The module thing always was weird to me because it's, is it really convenient that to swap out modules? And I just would just rather have a separate console at that point. At least I would. Versus popping in modules? I don't know.
I don't think it's a big deal. Whatever.
I think it's an idea past its time, though.
Yes.
For sure. So hopefully the backers get this. They've been waiting for, Jesus Christ, some of the people have been waiting for 3 years for this thing when they first pre-ordered it. And so, the first batch is going to, the first batch isn't everyone to pre-order it, but it's like the first, year and a half of people who pre-ordered the thing. So they're going to get them out to the first batch, and then after that, hopefully, they can fulfill the rest. You hope, right?
You hope.
So, all right. That's all I got to say about that. All right, Ian, we have a scumbag
seller
of the
week.
Week. And this scumbag seller of the week is actually a platform. We haven't ever really done this, but we're going to do a little story time on the CU podcast. And the culprit or perpetrator in this case is eBay.
eBay is the scumbag seller.
This comes via an engrossing Boston Globe article, right? Which now I cannot access to go through it, but I did read it. It's really good that I can't access the Boston Globe article that is big. No, I can access it. So there was a couple up in Massachusetts that...
Ina and David Steiner. And they've been with eBay doing stuff on eBay since its earliest times, since like 1999 is when they started. They were, a couple that had met in college, and they had been computer savvy, and they learned about eBay. And basically, they went around to garage sales, buying up stuff that was, collectible. Basically, these are like the beginnings of internet, like collector culture.
Sure.
And they would go around to the garage sales, find the things that were maybe underpriced that, would have a market online, and they would sell them off. So they started a...
First was a paper newsletter.
I think they said they did one issue of a paper newsletter before realizing that it made more sense to do
on the internet.
Online newsletter.
Yeah, because it's an online marketplace. So they did an online marketplace with like tips and tricks.
Yeah, it was called Auction Bites.
Which is a great name, by the way. I think I like that.
And they later changed it to E-commerce Bites, to cover, all the areas of e-commerce.
Yeah, like Amazon stuff.
But yeah, they would do like tips, tricks, talk about how to get your listing seen. They would talk about, shipping. They included a story about how, one time, I believe his name was David, shipped, something via Greyhound bus and saved hundreds of dollars by shipping it via Greyhound bus. So they got popular. They were in on the ground floor. They were, big within their online scene. They had this newsletter that people liked, and it's been continuously running since. And they, over the years, they have certainly covered eBay's changes in policies, and they have not always been... they've been fairly critical of some of these changes.
So the change, I guess the watershed moment that this article points out in the Boston Globe, and by the way, the article is by Aaron Pressman, is that when the CEO, Meg Whitman, left in 2007, was replaced by former Bain consultant John Donahue, said eBay began to cater to larger sellers and established retailers, a trend that continued when Devin Wenig was promoted CEO in 2015. The couple had pivoted their newsletter from how-to tips to reporting more on the changing strategy and new policies of the company. Their take on the new bay was often, though hardly exclusively, critical. And criticism didn't go down well at the firm. Prosecutors, by the way, they're filing a civil suit. And there's also prosecutors going after individuals, which we'll get into, at eBay. There's a civil suit and there's a criminal lawsuit against eBay, which we'll get into why. There's twists and turns of the story. Prosecutor said the harassment campaign against him started with an incident. So basically, this couple was at home.
They published a couple of articles critical of them after Whitman left. Devin Wenig was promoted to CEO. They posted articles specifically criticizing the fact that the CEO is making something like 215 times more than the average.
152 times. They said eBay CEO Devin Wenig earns 152 times that of an employee.
So that's when they started having problems. The first thing that happened to them was they received graffiti on their new fence that said at FidoMaster, which I guess was they don't know if the person was trying to say, hey, you're FidoMaster, or if they thought it was, a name from the person.
From an anonymous commenter on their newsletter said.
Yeah, it was a commenter who commented on their critical stuff.
So obviously whoever painted it was familiar with that newsletter to have done that.
Right.
They didn't think it was FidoMaster, that person themselves, wouldn't make any sense. But they were like, okay, this is weird. But then more stuff happened.
Then they started getting all sorts of junk mail. They got a call from a taxidermist about an order that they did not place. They got a mask in the mail, a bloody pig mask in the mail.
It wasn't clear if that was a Halloween mask, but it was like a pig mask.
It was a pig mask. I'm assuming it was probably a Halloween mask. But they got that while they were filing a police report.
On other stuff.
Because basically they had just been getting all of this harassment.
They also received live spiders and insects someone had ordered, and they showed up in their front door. They called the police. The police took it away.
Yeah.
So this all started happening fairly quickly in 2019. Tons of newsletters ranging from Heather's Irritable Bowel Syndrome News and the Satanic Temple. They also got porn and bondage stuff. And then there was also a Twitter account started throwing, her name's Ina, with expletive-laden taunts. So this was all building up, and they didn't know what was going on. The thing about the taxidermist was going to send him a small pig, but they followed up to be sure. Thankfully, they did, because the billing address didn't match anything. So the police obviously is taking reports and seeing this stuff happen. So the police is doing their job, and they're like, okay, this is weird. What's happening? They received more bizarre deliveries. A couple said one day it was a book for David called Grief Diaries: Surviving Loss of a Spouse. So whoever is doing this harassment campaign is implying that your wife's going to be dead.
Dead. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking like this is like mafia shit that's going on. This is like organized crime stuff. Finally, they basically had to do security cameras. While they were putting in the security cameras they'd purchased, David was up on a ladder. They saw a dark-colored Dodge Caravan driving up their street. Black van with New York plates. A black van coming up on their street. Their van went by the house a couple times. It was captured on security cameras. Later in the day, David noticed the same van pull out to follow him while he was in his car with his friend. A black van was following them. They called the police again. Three cruisers rushed to their house. They were not able to take down the license plate on the van, and the police weren't able to track down the vehicle. So this is now in the realm of, like, obviously physical harassment.
Yeah.
Threats of violence. You see a black van, you don't know what the hell's going to happen. They're going to shoot you. They're going to assault you. Super intimidating, obviously. They started sleeping in different rooms, a couple. David and Ina.
Setting up carts with, like, baking pans on them, so if someone, like, entered through their back door, it would make a, it would make a noise.
They did. There was a prank pizza thing that happened 4:30 a.m. in the morning. Someone ordered a pizza, and the guy thought the guy could have a gun. He pulls up because it's probably an Uber Eats guy, whatever, pulls up in a car, and it's, like, just to scare him.
You do now I feel, late. You feel bad because, like, the guy's scared. He puts his hands up and just puts the pizzas on the ground and walks away, apparently. That's what David said. And Ina points out, something good. She's like, this is fucked up. She's like, we started doing this. It was kind of like trying to help, provide tips to small businesses and things like that. And now these small businesses are being used against us. She felt bad. Now people are calling. It's not just harassment on them. It's harassment on the parts of the businesses that they're using, too.
So it took ahead. It was August 18th of 2019. David goes to the grocery store. This time a silver SUV started following him. So he drove him downtown. He was going to drive him to the police department. The SUV followed distance. David pulled over and parked across the street from the police station. As the SUV slowly drove past, he propped up the iPhone on the steering wheel and photographed the stalkers. He said, I was determined to take a picture this time. I just kept hitting the button. So now we get the full license plate number. Good on you, David. Get the full license plate number. The Natick police then quickly started to unravel the conspiracy. The vehicle tracked back to an eBay contractor who was staying at the Ritz, I guess the local Ritz there. This was eBay.
Yeah.
Doing this.
This was
people
eBay.
Working for eBay.
Actually working for eBay.
Working for eBay went after this couple.
That's insane.
This old couple who just did a fucking online newsletter.
I have to keep saying that to myself. This wasn't like a seller. This wasn't like a problem through eBay. This wasn't like a beef between sellers that got out of control. eBay fucking did this. And, Wenig, I believe, stepped down, and they said that this problem was one. It was a consideration for the reason why he was being replaced.
So the feds got involved with this. Forget that. The feds.
Six employees got fired. Six. Six actual eBay employees and one contractor.
The FBI got into this. This got serious. The fucking FBI going after eBay. Finally, it said everything stopped after tweets on September 6, 2019. So I guess they realized, we're screwed. They're on to us now. We got to stop this. So This is where it goes to. In June 2020, federal prosecutors announced criminal charges against six now former eBay employees and a contractor. The company apologized to the Steiners and in a lengthy statement said it had conducted its own investigation that had resulted in terminating all the employees charged by the government, plus communications chief Weimer, who has not been charged. A communications chief, someone high up the chain,
yeah,
was allegedly coordinating this effort to fucking harass, like really harass, not just cyber stalk and harass in person this couple, a Massachusetts couple. The investigation also found that former CEO Wendig had made inappropriate communications, but did not have advanced knowledge of the harassment and stalking that we know of, obviously, because you would not put that on the record. Wendig was not charged, was allowed to resign in September 2019 with a compensation package worth $57 million. The Steiner scandal was a consideration in his departure, the company said. I'm not saying the CEO knew about this, but the directive has to come from somewhere.
Yep.
For this. I don't. You're telling me all these employees went rogue on their own to do this, like, and spend money to do this and hire a quote unquote contractor? What, do they hire like a private investigator to harass this couple or what have you? Like, this is insane stuff. This is nuts.
Yeah.
I think this might be blowing up today when we're just recording this.
I think I saw it trending.
This honestly could be a movie. Like, you wouldn't believe this was a movie if this happens. So we have the criminal investigation and they're fucked. A huge civil lawsuit's coming. I don't know how much money they're going to get out of eBay. It ain't going to be a little amount.
No.
I know that. They're going to get millions of dollars from eBay for this. This is insane. This is insane.
Yep.
Let's see. Wendig's lawyer said an independent investigation confirmed that Devin Wendig had nothing to do with and no knowledge of any of the activities alleged in Mr. and Mrs. Steiner's complaint.
Okay.
Although he is an inviting target as a former CEO, he did not know of, approve, or authorize the conduct in regrets with the Steiner's experience. So the communications guy just did it on his own? Basically acted like a fucking thug? Acted like a thug to go after this couple? Like, what were they hoping to gain? Like, they're going to... It's a newsletter. Like, you're a huge... Like, what do you... You're not... They're not affecting eBay's bottom line. Like, you know how much money eBay makes? Like...
Well, it's like they said at the end. They said at the end of the day, they're still promoting people use the website. They're criticizing it, but the whole point of their newsletter is to essentially boils down to helping people sell stuff on eBay. It helps them use your service.
But like when we point out, rightfully so, and that the couple has done that, eBay doesn't push back against like people selling bullshit counterfeit stuff. We talk about that every other month. We're not affecting the bottom line of eBay at all.
No.
I doubt this couple really was. So, like, it was someone that felt slighted. Like, how dare they talk about me? And the reason why, you know, people might think the CEO became involved because the thing about you know, the CEO is making so much more money. It's like, oh, well, screw them. Well, I'll show them. Like, if that's a thought process, these are psychopaths.
Yeah.
eBay CEO Devin Wendig earns 152 times that of employees. That's when, allegedly, this stuff happened. Like, that was a tipping point. So... My God, like, this is horrific.
Yeah, it's awful.
We're talking about a company with the, you know, on the stock exchange, it's like a publicly traded company, eBay, that makes, you know, billions of dollars going after, you know, like a couple. It's nuts. There's a little more to the story, but we gave you the nuts and bolts here.
Yeah, go read it. It's a well-written article.
Boston Globe. Check it out. Google it.
Been all over the internet.
They said, David said, the vitriol towards us, where did it come from? I don't know, David. I don't know. Try to send you live spiders. Try to send you fucking horror masks and try to send you like dead pigs and sign you up to shit. It's insane. Sometimes in the past 2 years, I haven't been able to recognize myself, David told the Globe on the day after Cook was sentenced. Okay, Philip Cook, the former senior manager of security operations... This former senior manager of security operations for eBay's global security team was sentenced to 18 months in prison, one of the defendants. It was the first sentencing of anyone involved in that case. Global security team, you're concerned about this couple. What the fuck is this couple going to do to your your eBay?
They just wanted to be assholes.
You're fucking thugs.
But they just wanted to be assholes.
You're thugs. You thought you're what are you fucking what are you like a drug gang? Going after like, you know, like, wait, what the fuck are you doing? going after these people. Like, yeah, this is nuts. I hope you enjoy that story, because like when I read this, I couldn't believe when I was read through. That's why I said, Ian, you got to read this. And I was like, okay. The next day, he's like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy. Well, and enjoy your retirement with millions of eBay's dollars, Ina and David. Holy shit.
If you have millions of dollars and you'd like to give us some of that, we have a Patreon. Patreon.com/CU podcast.
If you've gotten a civil lawsuit from eBay.
If you've cleaned up recently.
And you want to give a little bit of money.
Civil lawsuit and you're feeling generous. Patreon.com/CU podcast. Podcast.
Jesus Christ, Ian. God, my ears.
Woo. Hot blooded.
What can you get there?
Hot blooded. I'm actually going to have a writing up today. You get the full video podcast. You get hangouts. I gotta do a hangout this month. It's early. It's early in the month.
Yeah, I'll do mine this weekend.
All right, you do yours this weekend. I'll do mine next weekend. Then we'll compare.
And you can vote on a
poll topic. Poll topic.
In second place, 36% arcade games you cannot beat as a child that others could. And in the first place, regarding Activision and Blizzard, which we have an update to today as well. Should you still support the games of a problematic video game corporation? Ian, what are your thoughts? You're more connected to Activision Blizzard and their products than I am.
Well, let's talk about the update.
You want to do the update first?
Let's do the update
via
first.
Bloomberg.
Bloomberg.
The Bloom I can trust. Bloomberg.
So yes, huge update. J. Allen Brack will be replaced by Jen O'Neill and Mike Ibarra. This reporting comes from Jason Schreier.
President of Blizzard.
Yeah, Blizzard president J. Allen Brack is leaving the company amid a cultural reckoning at parent Activision Blizzard. Brack's departure was disclosed in an email to staff Tuesday. He'll be replaced, like I said, by Jen O'Neill and Mike Ibarra, new co-leaders of Blizzard. Shares were down more than 4%. So this is coming off of the horrifying sexual harassment and employment lawsuit against Activision Blizzard that is being brought by the state of California.
But it sounds like it was mostly the Blizzard side of that.
I guess mostly the Blizzard side is what it seems to be.
Because they're still kind of running separate.
We talked about it last week. Real horrible stuff. I knew that the up tops were not going to come out of this unscathed. I'm surprised that there hasn't been more changes already, but this is not surprising for me to see. In terms of, you know, whether or not you should continue to support the games, even some of the Blizzard employees have come out and said, you know, in the wake of this, obviously, Blizzard and Activision Blizzard is a big company. It's a big umbrella of a company. They publish all sorts of games, tons of games.
Two giant companies that combined.
Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, Diablo, League of Legends, Overwatch. I'm obviously forgetting tons of things on the Activision side, but Call of Duty obviously is, you know, one of the
Pitfall.
Big ones.
Giant for them still.
Barnstorming.
River Raid.
So, you know, their games have worked their way through, video game culture and into, the lives of people who make their living off of video games. Streamers, reporters, things of that nature.
Sure.
And the Activision Blizzard employees staged a walkout and said, you know, if you want to support us, here's what you can actually do to support us. And they gave a list of places they would have liked to have seen donations go to. And they clearly said, hey, don't harass people who are streaming these games. Don't go after them. They didn't do anything. The games are, you know, out there. I kind of agree. When a company does something like this, I don't want to continue supporting them. I'm not in a, I am in no rush to go out and buy a game made by Activision or Blizzard. And because this stuff is on my mind a lot, it comes up when I go to play something and I'm like, maybe I don't want to play it. I will personally be sitting out the Diablo 2 remaster. And I was really looking forward to the Diablo 2 remaster. I fucking love Diablo. But I don't know that you need to, if you're a World of Warcraft streamer, I think you can do a lot of things to show yourself in solidarity with the people who work at Blizzard that will actively help them like I said, donating to the causes they state, but I don't know that you necessarily need to leave World of Warcraft behind. I'm having a tough time framing this because I personally feel like, yes, I will probably change my game playing habits more. I haven't played Diablo 3 since this news. I will probably not play it for a good long time. I will not be partaking in the Diablo 2 remaster. But I'm also not going to shit all over people who, say, stream Diablo and make money off of it. Or the people who pre-ordered Diablo 2 and are getting it. Do you get what I'm saying? It's tough. But like I said, the people who work at Activision Blizzard clearly stated these are things you can do to show your support. And I think that's where you should be focusing your energy, is on the things they want you to support in their name.
You don't support the games, they can lose their jobs. I mean, that's the nuts. I mean, that's the long and short of it. If they don't make revenue, they cut. And where they cut from? Lower level employees first.
They want changes at their business place. They don't want the business to disappear.
So
it's tough. I get it.
We're talking about giant corporations. There's always going to be, I hate using the word bad eggs. You're going to have a lot of good employees and you're going to have assholes. That goes with movie productions, obviously, that employ hundreds of people, video games. You're not going to be able to avoid it. There's always going to, no company has just perfect employees. Obviously, this is what needed a cultural change. It sounds like the Activision Blizzard CEO, Bobby Kotick, is basically cleaning house and is going to exert more direct control. Because obviously Blizzard has not had a great track record the last few years in general.
No, it's
so
been
like,
awful.
So it sounds like they're going to basically take it a tighter rein in the ship. I mean, if it wasn't going to be this, I don't know what. Because there's obviously been a lot of, it hasn't been great for Blizzard the past few years. Jason Schreier laid out a timeline with Activision started to push for a company to cut costs because Blizzard revenues were tanking in 2017-18, produce more games at a faster pace. The former president of Blizzard resigned in 2018, and then Brack took over after that. Then you had the Diablo Immortal stuff, the Blitzchung stuff, obviously. WC3 Reforged, I'm not familiar with what happened with that situation. And then they started closing offices in 2019. So Activision is basically not happy with Blizzard's performance at this point. So this was probably long overdue to take direct control, but obviously not. You didn't want it to happen like this. This isn't just a revenue thing. This is ruining people's lives and discrimination and harassment. If Kotick probably blew a fuse, obviously, and it's like, okay, enough's enough. You're done. So people are speculating whether or not this means that Blizzard will cease to exist as a semi-separate entity at some point, potentially. But we'll have to see. So getting back to the point of supporting the company, I don't think you should feel guilty if you're buying the game still. You want to buy, obviously, lots of talented people worked on it for years, these games. And you're not hurting the people, the people that are getting ousted. They're set. They have their golden parachutes. You're not hurting them by not buying the product. I mean, you're not. It's sad, but that's what it comes down to. They're fine. They can retire tomorrow, and they're going to be living high off the hog, as they say. You like that expression? So, yeah, I mean, it's up to you. It's up to your moral compass and what you want to do. If you feel like, hey, I feel weird doing this because, they're Blizzard's emblazoned on this game, then don't. I don't think most people would judge you for that. But, that's not going to make things better for the people that were hurt. It just won't. It won't affect it in that respect.
Yeah, it's not going to affect the people that you want it to affect, and it's not what the people who are affected asked of you. So,
yeah, a boycott's not going to make it better.
My whole point here is listen to the people who are actually walking out, listen to the people who are actually affected, and do what they ask you to do if you want to show support. And if that's make some donations to various causes, make those donations. But they have not asked you to stop playing. If your livelihood is streaming World of Warcraft, stream the World of Warcraft. I don't think anyone's going to hold that against you.
Yeah, like I said, these games have hundreds of people working on them. This isn't one or two people running the company. People, not to bring up Elon Musk, but he's the head of Tesla. But he does douchey things. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't buy a Tesla if you want to buy a nice a car you want. That doesn't mean, because obviously you have tons of people working on it. And so the one or two people you don't like, that's not the entire product. If they're a large face of the product, or they're pulling strings in some capacity, that's not it. I mean, there's tons of awful directors that have done really good movies. You're not going to see it because that director could be an asshole behind the scenes. You know, I mean, it happens. Lots of bad people in entertainment. That's the bottom line. It's the bottom line. This portion of the CU podcast is sponsored by NordVPN. It's what I use to keep myself secure on the internet, and you can too. If you care about your online security, a VPN is vital. And Nord is offering a huge discount on a two-year plan of NordVPN, plus four free additional months at nordvpn.com/CU podcast.
So what do you get with NordVPN? You get secure internet. All of your internet data stays safe behind a wall of next-generation encryption. You block malware and ads. Turn on CyberSec to avoid malware hosting websites, annoying ads, and botnet control. Strict no-log policy at NordVPN. They don't track, collect, or share your private data. It's none of their business. Protect your data nonstop. Killswitch will make sure your data will not be exposed, not even for a brief moment. VPN servers everywhere. Choose from 5,400 plus servers in 59 countries. Enjoy the internet with no limits or borders. And P2P is welcome here. Share large files with no hassle thanks to hundreds of secure P2P servers. Worldwide access. Enjoy instant secure access to hundreds of streaming websites worldwide. And you can use it on multiple devices. One account lets you connect up to six devices. Secure them all in any combination and use with ease. It's just a click. Using NordVPN is as simple and intuitive as making your morning coffee.
Take control of your internet experience today with NordVPN. Right now, you can get a two-year plan at a huge discount, plus four additional months for free when you go to nordvpn.com/CU podcast. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/CU podcast, or simply click the link in the description below on YouTube.
All right. I'm going to do some voicemails, I guess. Let's do them.
You sound enthralled, Dean, to do it.
I've just been overly warm this entire podcast.
It's like 68 degrees. It's like perfect.
I know. It's not you. It's me, man.
Your internal temperature is just like, is it the lights right above you? I got one right above me.
I don't know.
The lights are too hot?
Very hot.
Go to anchor.fm/CU podcast. Leave us a voice message. Try to keep it short if you can. You get in, you get out. You can compliment Ian's nicely shaved, groomed beard. My hair that's staying there somehow. All right, first question here.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is David calling from the San Gabriel Valley. And my question is, if you all were to open a completely unnecessary arcade, or maybe just an Ian arcade and a Pat arcade or barcade, what are some unique arcade cabinets you'd all want to have there that are more than two players? So, you know, and there's some obvious ones, right? There's the Simpsons, TMNT, NBA Jam, right? Four-player arcade cabinets. But what are some unique arcade cabinets that you would all want to have there that are more than two players? For me, it would be Alien vs. Predator, a three-player arcade, beat 'em up, real fun. All right, peace.
I think we get this question every 6 months or so, it seems like, but all right.
Alien vs. Predator would obviously be a big one. I would want, if you're asking about multiplayer stuff, I would absolutely want Pac-Man verse. I would want Pac-Man
verse.
That's
like, yeah.
I would want, I would want the big one. I would want the one with the four bar stools.
Oh, you want the big one on the screen?
The screen.
Whoa, okay.
Screen. I want the game show style one.
You got to take out a small business loan for that, buddy. That's expensive.
I want the game show style one.
I'll be happy with the cocktail one.
I would also, of course, do, I mean, we're talking dreams here. I would also do off-road. Off-road is a great multiplayer
Super
game.
Super off-road, I know that gets ignored. That's a great, great multiplayer game.
It is. It's fantastic.
The sounds in the game, the horns, the wheel, the people spinning the wheel. Like, anyone could just slap in a quarter and play that game. It's easy to learn, hard to master. Super off-road.
Also, I would want a like 3 to 4 player grid setup.
Really?
Yeah.
Deep cut, Ian. I loved grid. Because it's a, you know,
it was fun
third person shooter.
It was neat.
And it basically has a computer control scheme with the trackball.
It's a trackball. Yeah, it was a little weird for me because I was I'm lefty. I would have done it.
They had
the opposite, but
they had one machine at the end of Seaside Parksboro right before Sawmill Pizza. Everyone in Jersey's like, yeah, Sawmill Pizza. Right at the end, they had one machine. I remember playing it there. I never in my life have seen more than one hooked up together before.
There was three of them at the Cybertron in the
so you could do a little deathmatch, yeah, sort of stuff.
And then this is not necessarily a multiplayer one, but I just want to make sure I've got the name right. And it's a It's a unique machine. I keep thinking it's called Crack and Shoot, but I'm not pulling it up.
All right, well, real quick for me then. I think I like the Gauntlet. I think a Gauntlet is great, or Gauntlet Legends. But I think the original Gauntlet, people get into that still. The original Gauntlet would be a great one for people. How about, no, that's not an arcade machine. But someone told me about, was it Skylar told me about it? Yeah. There's a four player, the newer Pac-Man, table hockey game.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
A four player version. I never paused that. I played the two player one with all the little mini pucks, but there's a four player version of that. That's a big one.
Quicken Crash, it's called.
Quicken Crash?
Quicken Crash. That was at the arcade that I used to go to. I love Quicken Crash. It's a timed Namco shooting gallery that uses visual trickery to make it look like you're constantly, or that you can shoot a coffee mug. And so what it is it pops up like little target plates and you shoot them and you've got to be fast. It's a quick draw game. But the big payoff is,
oh,
that
wow. The cup
last
explodes.
Thing is blow up the cup.
So that's not actually a cup. What is that?
So it is actually a mug. What it is there's a mug underneath that forms together and there's a little actuator that makes, so it's a picture of a mug. And when you shoot it, the picture of the mug flies up and underneath there's a mug, there's mug pieces. There's an actuator that hits it and they go boom, making it look like they explode and it's reflected up into the image.
Brilliant.
It's really, really cool looking and it's
a cool effect. Look at it.
It's a super cool effect that is super believable. And like,
wow,
that thing was in the mall arcade for like a year and I played it. Every time I went to the mall.
I've never seen that in my life.
I love shooting the mug. And it's also one of the coolest light guns I've ever seen. If you can see a picture of the light gun, it's a really neat looking light gun.
It's a beefy looking, like Lethal Enforcers looking, like Magnum gun there. Real quick for me, the last one, I want four players of Cruising USA together.
All right.
You got to go classic with that. Okay. The next one is...
Hey, I like when you guys report on video game news. I really love your perspective. But I love it even more when you just talk about whatever the fuck you want.
Language.
So please keep doing that. And here's my question. If you could rename the banana anything you want, what would you rename it? Banana. Bye-bye.
I don't know about that one.
I don't know. What would I rename a banana if I could?
It's perfect. Perfect name. Anna, it repeats.
Snackarang?
Snackarang's not bad.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Philbo, a.k.a. Phil Bowser again. And the question for you this time is, I really enjoyed the segment y'all did about your favorite and ranking the fast food restaurants, but what are some of your favorite condiments? Personally, my wife and I love hot sauce, so we crush Tabasco, Texas Pete, Sriracha, the like. But would love to hear what you guys add to food. Take care.
What do you think, Ian? What's one of your favorites?
Big hot sauce fan.
Of course, gotta go hot sauce.
Very big hot sauce fan. As a matter of fact, I was eating chicharrones last night with Ghost Scream Verde hot sauce that is very good. I was also eating them with aardvark hot sauce, the aardvark habanero last night. But I'm big on mustards. I love mustard.
Did you have Mr. Mustard back east like we did? Mr. Mustard?
No.
You have Mr. Mustard?
No.
It's nice spicy mustard.
I love brown mustard. I love yellow mustard. I love gray poupon. In Buffalo, Weber's mustard with horseradish is a big thing. I loved that. Yellow mustard with horseradish.
Walnut mustard is good. You ever have one of those?
No, that would be amazing, though. I like walnuts. So real big on mustards, on most of my sandwiches. My ideal hot dog is mustard, onion, maybe a little relish. Mustards and hot sauces are my big go-tos.
Damn, I'm hungry. Intermittent fasting. I love cocktail sauce. That's really like a mixture of like horseradish and like
cocktail
a little vinegar and ketchup.
It's horseradish, a couple dashes of Worcestershire usually, and ketchup.
I mean, when I make it, when I cook shrimp,
lemon.
When I cook it, I mean, you're fine just using horseradish and ketchup. You get most of the flavor just from that.
Sure, if you don't want to live a little.
And I love, as Seinfeld says, salsa is number one condiment in America because they like saying salsa. Salsa is so versatile.
It is.
You put on fish, put on chicken. Use it for a dip. And the variety of salsas now, when I go, like, mango salsa is delicious.
Oh, it's like, so good.
Sprouse makes a good one, Ian, a nice mango salsa. I had one that was like, what was it? There was like a lime one they had that was like, there's so many different salsas that it's almost like each one can almost be its own category. There's like, you know, there's salsa with like lots of beans in it that are thicker, and you can just go for like a pico de gallo style, where it's just like almost all tomatoes. Salsa is like so versatile.
It's delicious stuff.
It's stupendous.
Hi guys, this is Jose from Michigan. I just wanted to get your opinion on the new Chinese handheld emulators that are popping up, especially the 1X Player. We know that Nintendo has dominated the handheld market with the Switch, but should they be concerned about these new powerful Chinese handhelds that are popping up?
So I looked this up, and this was like, this would have been impressive if the Steam Deck didn't exist. Like these are ones I guess they were trying to get going. There's Kickstarters for like one or two of these sort of things where, you know, and that's what makes the Steam Deck so incredible, is that the Steam Deck is like hundreds of dollars less than these things are. You know, like they're really taking a probably a bath on these units of Valve that they sell.
Yeah, so the One Notebook, it's One Notebook and Tencent. So this is like the 1X Player, and I'm just learning about this, but this isn't like a cheap Chinese knockoff. This is This has got some of the bigger names, you know, in China behind it.
Sure.
But what is the price on it? What's the
Wasn't cheap. I do know that. When I looked up
So the 1X Player is available to purchase now from Indiegogo at an early bird pricing of $899, yeah, with retail pricing up to $1,159. Yeah. That's exactly in line with what I said when we talked about the
So again, that's why the Steam Deck,
the Steam Deck.
That's why it's like, well, I don't need it, but it's such a good deal. You don't want to lose money by not buying it, because Valve is over, you know, they're taking a loss on them.
Right, because they have the marketplace. They have the built-in marketplace to make that money back tenfold.
Lickety split, they can make it back.
Anyone who gets that, we've all got games in our inventory, but everyone's going to buy at least one game the day they get that.
I feel so bad for people that got this 1X Player and then they see the Steam Deck announced.
Right.
It's like, well, it's something that it might be as powerful or a little bit more, but it's double the price, you know?
So, doesn't look like it has like the thumb pads or any of that stuff either.
Or the trackpad, which I like.
The trackpads. That's what I mean, the thumb trackpads.
Yeah, I'm in love with that.
Hi, Pat and Ian. I hope you're both keeping well. It's Aaron from Durham in the UK. Why isn't there much love for certain retro sports games, such as the FIFA series, in contrast to racing and wrestling games, which are far more fondly remembered and replayed? Love the podcast.
Well, across the pond, Aaron, we don't really care much about what we call soccer. We just don't.
Well, I think he's using FIFA as an example because it's what's common to him. I think he's the same thing can be said about football and baseball games over here. The reason why people don't go back and play a lot of the retro older years is because they're based on real leagues with real people, and I think people get kind of caught up in having the most up-to-date teams. There's no real reason to play a Madden 08 when you can get a Madden 17 for the same price or something like that.
I thought I was more thinking of like games from the 90s, like, because people still love NHL 94.
Well, but I'm getting to that. There's specific years, sure. 94 would be one example where they get everything just right. Tecmo Super Bowl, because it's a different type of game. It's arcadey. It's pick up and play. But you have to have those special one-off cases. You have to have those examples where they're really doing something different. Racing games and wrestling games, on the other hand, wrestling games change all sorts of systems. People love the classic wrestlers. They want to see what the rosters are.
Yeah.
Racing games, they all handle differently. They may have certain tracks that you like. I think the older wrestling, the easiest way for me to put this is the older wrestling games and racing games can oftentimes feel like a standalone experience, whereas an earlier year of FIFA or an earlier year of Madden just feels like the old version of what you're playing now.
Yeah, and then thinking back to like, you know, my cousin played soccer, so he had like the Super Nintendo FIFA games that came out, you know, in like 93, 94.
Sure.
And they all like run together. You know, there's nothing that really separates, and there wasn't like that one, like, this is the Super Nintendo soccer game. No, there is no NBA Jam for soccer that we played, or Tecmo Super Bowl. They just didn't have one.
Right. If they did, people would still be playing it, I'm sure.
What we got was Mega Man Soccer.
Which was a lost fucking opportunity to do something cool.
Sure.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Foxandra here again. I heard you playing my voicemail before, and I realized I got cut off before I could even ask my question. I'm so sorry. I know you can't stand those douchebags calling in without actually asking anything, thinking there's some sort of comedian doing the funny voices. You want to talk about funny voices? None of the ones you've heard are half as embarrassing as my dad trying to do his godfather impression to the waitress when you're out in a family dinner. Only thing more cringeworthy than that was my ex trying to get me back by texting me some Symphony of the Night meme. What is a man? Listen, the only miserable pile he had was under his belt.
Whoa!
So I gotta set the record straight. I was born and raised Jersey, and oh crap, the question! Pat, I was wondering, you ever think about you get so big someday that your book sold so much you'd run into one at a flea market years down the line? The idea seem interesting to me. Like you get so popular, you run into yourself somewhere you wouldn't expect years ago. Anyway, I think that was under a minute, but...
Hey, Voxandra, I love you, but I'm glad it's only a minute, Voxandra. I love the shtick, Voxandra.
Have you ever run into your book anywhere for sale?
No, not yet. I've seen my DVD laying out at a swap meet, but it was someone that I gave a copy to.
Oh.
That just had, oh, they're trying to sell it. I'm friends with like one or two sellers that, you know, I've given a copy of the book to. But no, I haven't seen it yet.
Have you seen ever any of your DVDs ever in like a...
Like a book off or whatever? No, but I have had reports that my book has shown up in a couple of those stores.
I can't remember who it was.
Someone said they got my book for only like $10 or something. Like, that's a fucking deal.
There is there was someone online, I can't remember who, but someone in the YouTube community who puts out DVDs had taken a picture. They saw their DVD at like a book off or something like that one day.
But every month now, I'm seeing more and more people ask me, hey, Pat, is this your signature on this NES game that I found? That's or me and Ian.
Yeah. I've had people ask me that too. That's interesting. But I mean, when you think about it, I've signed tons and tons of NES games. At some point, they're going to go up.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't begrudge you getting sick of me, and you need some money for your Tiger Heli that I signed. It's usually not Tiger Heli. Usually better at games than that.
Foxandra.
Okay. Love the Jersey Girls. All right. What's next here? Skip.
Speak Jersey to me.
Exactly.
Hey guys, this is Danny from New York.
Danny.
I have a question mostly for Ian. As a fellow shoot 'em up fan, I was wondering what are some of your favorite shooters and if there are any you've been playing recently. For me, if I had to pick, I'd say Ketsui for my favorite new school bullet hell style and Metal Black for the more classic style shooter.
I love these questions. I have been playing a lot of shooters recently. I think one of my all-time favorites is probably Mushihime-sama, the Bug Princess. I've been playing that a lot again lately. I have something like, I checked my Steam account. I don't do a lot of PC gaming, but I have like 50 hours into Mushihime-sama. Just a fucking arcade shooter. I've played a lot of Mushihime-sama. But one that I really like that I've bought three times now, and I don't see a lot of people talk about because it's kind of basic, but I love Raiden 4. Raiden 4 is fucking fantastic. I think it's an amazing shooter. There's nothing like specifically visually impressive about it, but the soundtrack is good. It's really fun to play. The stage layout is great. It's snappy. It gets everything done properly.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Gizmo from California, and I wanted to ask you what your thoughts were on in-game advertisement, because it seems that people have taken an entirely different attitude as of late.
So, I think, again, it goes back to, like, the frog in boiling water. We're getting so used to now stuff being advertised in-game that, you know, it's common. Like, it used to be like, okay, going back to like Pole Position, you put stuff on billboards, it's kind of part of it. And obviously, as you get more and more involved with modern games, and it's more intrusive, but then sometimes it's part of the open world. I mean, Ian probably would know more about this than me in terms of like them building in the advertisement more and more as you're playing a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I mean, you think about advertising in games, and I mean, it existed a long time ago. Like you said, Pole Position had ads on the boards.
Yeah.
Tapper, famously. Had the Budweiser license,
yeah.
And I've got the Apple II version of Tapper that I played all the time, advertised Mountain Dew.
Oh,
yeah, advertised Mountain Dew. So I mean it's been in games for a while. It is getting more intrusive, right, though, and in more kind of in your face. One instance that I always think of is Burnout Paradise, which is the open world Burnout game. You know, big car crashes and stuff like that. But billboards for like subway and shit everywhere when you're driving around. You know, I mean, it's just it's everywhere.
Yeah. I'll do a few more.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Drew. I'm a big fan of the show. Quick question. Bigger human garbage, Mike Kennedy versus Tommy Tallarico?
Well, I'm not going to do a straight judgment on that. I'll just say this. The only thing Mike Kennedy ever said about this is that we were drunken podcasters.
Yeah.
And he left it at that. That was all the slander or libel that was ever thrown at us was that. It wasn't anything, you know, ultra personal or making up lies about how I've lost friends by talking about a game console that's going to be delayed for a third time soon, or making up stories about how, you know, I was forcing someone to kiss my ring in person and just outright fucking slander. Kennedy never did that. Kennedy was smart to basically just focus on, you know, running his idea into the ground without taking as much personal shots, you know, as Mr. Tallarico has done.
I can't wait until I stop hearing about both of them.
Oh, Mike is, not involved in video games anymore.
No.
I don't know what's happened to him. I haven't read that book, but, you know, he's out of the scene, I think. He probably still posts on Atari Age every now and then. All right, next.
Hey, guys. This is a quick man from the UK. My question is for both of you. It's, there's two types of competitive gaming, like major competitive gaming in my eyes. There's speedrunning, and there's player versus player, like fighting games, first-person shooters, that kind of thing. What do you think is more, like, interesting and impressive to watch? Is it speedrunning, or is it player versus player? Right. Have a good one. Thank you.
Well, there's different things. There's more, to me, there's more drama in player versus player because it's a competition, and it's person versus person, obviously. So you have nerves, and you have, like, I actually enjoy watching the fighting competitive game.
I really enjoy high-level fighting game competition. It's really fun to watch. The better the game, you know, the more it plays out like a real fight. I like watching Tekken. I like watching the high-end Street Fighter stuff. You know, Guilty Gear. I have no interest in actually speedrunning myself. It would drive me nuts. And I don't know, and this is not to sound insulting, I don't necessarily like watching the journey in real time, but I do love seeing like these videos that come out. Like I think it's very impressive. I have nothing bad to say about it. I just don't enjoy watching. I love seeing it when it's all said and done.
Yeah, because obviously there's people. If you're a speedrunner, that's a lifestyle. You have to put in thousands of hours into some of these games.
Yep.
In order to hit those marks, and like that's all you can do, which is fine. I'm not putting judgment on that. But yeah, I can't. Like Zian said, I can't watch you on Twitch try and fail and go back and reset every. I don't get it, but I understand some people like that. I just can't get into that. But yeah, I'll watch like a speed run. I'll watch like a finished speed
run. Oh, yeah, I'll watch a finished speed run. Yeah. I'll give you props. Yeah. I'll talk about it on here. I think it's very cool. I don't like watching the process.
Yeah, it'd be akin to like, okay, going back to the Olympics, I'm going to watch the...
You like eating sausage. You just don't want to see how it's made.
I want to watch the 100-meter dash happen. I don't want to see him training, you know, all the years before to get to that 100-meter dash at the Olympics. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see the end result.
Yeah.
All right, we gonna do one more?
One more.
Let's see. Do you think someone checked in with us?
I hope so.
You think someone did?
You guys just can't help yourselves, can ya? You gotta rip on my Amico, you gotta blast my controllers, you gotta slam my cornhole, and the physical media, we're not even calling it that, it's physical products. Big difference. Watch the video and listen to what Hans Gruber is trying to tell you. Physical products. They're only $20 anyway. You know what those Neo Geo physical products used to cost? And you still think my controller's too expensive too, even though it's clearly because of the value? But hey, if you can't afford it, that's what the Mad Cats version is for. You think that cornhole video made me look bad? Okay, I'm going to load up AOL and I'm going to show you. Cornhole video. Whoa, that is not what I wanted. Now I gotta clear my browser history again.
Oh, Tommy, you lovable scamp.
You scamp.
Oh, clear that browsing history there, Tommy.
I was just so lovable on the podcast, but just...
I did a sandwich with Tommy.
Oh, you did a sandwich with us, Tom. Yeah,
sure.
Gotta bring this caliber. This is the Tommy that we want to see.
This is the Tom I want to see running a game company. All right, that's it for the City Podcast.
That's it.
That was a fun one.
That was all right.
It wasn't 2 hours. It was an hour 46, so that's all right.
I'm going to go home and have fucking 5 showers because apparently
what's wrong with
I don't
you? I'm
know.
Comfortable. My nose always sweats. I've got a little nose.
Oh, man.
My nose doesn't breathe. It's not breathing my nose.
My metabolism's getting jumpy.
That's good. You're losing weight then. You're gonna burn some calories.
Maybe.
There.
Joining the Y tomorrow.
I remember when you went to the Y. Did you go to the Y when I knew you?
I might have been at the tail end of a Y membership, but I've belonged to EOS Fitness up there.
So did I, yeah.
And I belonged to...
You go to the Y? You going to do some laps? I got to swim. I look at these swimmers, and I'm like, I got to get that shape. I got to swim.
I'm going to work my glutes.
You going to do some squats?
I'm going to get the most enviable dad ass.
Is that a thing, dad ass?
Making it.
Not dead ass, dad ass.
Dad ass.
All right, well...
Crack walnuts with this ass.
You want the Van Damme ass?
Yeah.
That's a goal. Yeah. Walnuts are going to be using the mustard we talked about.
That's right. Ass made mustard. All right, I'm getting out of here.
Okay, Ian. Tell me, you can give me an ass update next week. All right, we'll see you later, everyone.